New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Experian. Are you paying for subscriptions you don't use, but can't find the time or energy to cancel them? Experian could cancel unwanted subscriptions for you, saving you an average of $270 per year and plenty of time. Download the Experian app. Results will vary. Not all subscriptions are eligible. Savings are not guaranteed. Paid membership with connected payment account required.
Good morning and welcome to episode 79 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name's Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host John Shipley. Where to even begin, John? A third straight loss to an AFC North team, just third straight loss in general. Jags are now 8-6 on the season, but I feel like the record kind of only save face for so long because now the Jags are tied with both the Colts and the Texans. So they're just still atop the division leaderboard by way of tiebreaker. But, man, like, feels like I think I asked you last week if the sky is falling in Jacksonville, and it certainly feels like it this week if it wasn't last week.
It was even when the game ended, and then the, like, you know, late addition on Sunday night, the end of the press conference, Doug Peterson saying Trevor Lawrence had been added to concussion protocol. That's obviously, like, you know, potential, you know, turning point, you know, for the season in general. Like you said, yeah, you can only point to the record so long. I think Peterson even said today they're still first place in the AFC South, which is technically correct. Yeah, but, I mean, three losses in a row, and none of them it felt like was a game where they just got, like, none of them felt like a 49ers game, you know, where they just got beat by a better team and just got beat down all game. All three losses in a row, it felt like the Jaguars directly, like, did it to themselves.
Every loss this season, I've been telling people the whole weekend that, like, it feels like the Niners are the only team that's actually beating the Jaguars, and every other loss has been the Jaguars just beating themselves. So, in a way, the Jags are 13-1 this year. But
I was going to say, when you put it that way.
So, they would be first in that regard, too. But, yeah, it's brutal. The Lawrence injury was definitely, like, kind of, like, came out of nowhere. It was on the very last question of Doug's
post-game
availability. And he just kind of, like, whispered, like, yeah, Lawrence is in the protocol. Not even, like, saying that he got a concussion. And so, obviously, there's, like, speculation, or we're trying to figure out exactly what play it occurred on. There was an intentional grounding in the third quarter where his, like, head kind of snapped back, like, almost Tua-like. So that would be my guess. But then there was also a scramble drill in the fourth quarter where he got lit up pretty good. So, I mean, either way, he finished the game. Maybe he shouldn't have. He self-diagnosed it and apparently told team doctors after the game ended that he was feeling walky or whatever. So he ended up not talking to the media last night because he was in the protocol. And so it's just like a deflating feeling, like the same feeling fans were probably having after leaving the Chiefs game and the Niners game and the Texans game all at home earlier this season, and the Bengals game too. But then add on top of the fact that Lawrence sustained yet another injury and is probably unlikely to play this coming week. It's like just all the air is out of the balloon right now.
Yeah, like not even knowing the severity of that. This is obviously like the most potentially impactful of the three injuries he's had this year, because the other two injuries, it's like a pain tolerance, you know, thing more or less. And he actually had some control on whether he would play or not. you know, he literally completely out of his hands this week. There have been some cases of guys entering protocol and playing the next week. Amari Cooper, he entered the protocol after a concussion against the Rams in week 12. No, week 13. Ended up clearing protocol on Saturday, practiced on Friday, and played against the Jaguars that Sunday. So really seems like whether or not he practices, you know, specifically on Friday would indicate whether or not he's going to play. You know, we just saw CJ Stroud obviously miss a game. Peterson has said both last night and today that he thinks it was the play where he scrambled and I think took a shot from Roquan Smith and then got snapped back. When you see the replay of the play, I'm like, how is that not like any flag throw? Like he took some hits last night. He like throughout the game. So, you know, Peterson was asked about that intentional grounding and said, you know, basically he was fine throughout the game. You know, like nothing really came of that. So that's obviously the storyline to watch entering the next week. And we'll obviously talk about the Buccaneers on Friday, things like that. Big chance, you know, like you said, there's a very real reality that CJ Beathard starts that game and what is basically a must-win game for them. But, you know, even if Lawrence, you know, did start, I mean, we saw against Baltimore on Sunday, it kind of felt like, you know, a perfect example of what the offense has been really all this season. I don't have any stats tracking, like, missed opportunities to score in a like scoring territory, but I would guess the Jaguars have to be like near the top this year. It seems like even in the games they've won, they left points on the board. This week they left anywhere between 12 to, you know, I think, you know, 20 points if you're considering, first of all, McManus missed two field goals. The 55-yard field goal, I think you can give them a little bit leeway for, you know, not only is it 55 yards, but obviously the win, but obviously understandable when he's missed four of his last five. If, you know, nobody wants to give him any leeway, I won't stand in the middle of the barrage of tomatoes on that one because I understand it. It sounded like for like weeks Doug was gritting his teeth talking about him. And then at halftime on the broadcast, somebody asked him about the first half and he was like, first of all, we got to make our kicks. So kind of shows you, you know, where they're at. And then that sequence right before Lawrence's fumble, that was like exactly what the offense has been this year, right? Like that entire four plays, ETN loses 2 yards on an outside run that he had no chance on. Yeah. Evan Ingram, false start. Parker Washington, it was a brutal drop because he wouldn't have got the first down, but it would have been third and short. And honestly, in that scenario, I would imagine that'd be four down territory, right?
Right. Yeah. Like Lawrence zipped it to him, but like it still hit him in the hands. Like you're in the NFL, you got to make that catch. So like that was a blatant and bad drop.
I thought that was Lawrence's best drive of the game, which it ended in obviously his worst play of the game. And I thought Derek Klassen put it well. He's him and Jared Goff suffer from the same ailment. And it was like parentheses gangly fumbles often. And the fumbling thing, I don't think it's going to go away, you know, at this point. I don't know, like, whether it's, like, the minute details of ball security because, like, he literally just dropped the ball while running, you know, like,
yeah,
unforced fumble or, you know, trying to make a play and it just doesn't happen. His other, you know, strip sack later in the game led to 3 points. It felt a lot more inconsequential, but just overall, like, this offense felt like it had so many issues, you know, imagining like supplanting CJ Beathard now into it instead of Lawrence. I mean, where'd you really go there? Because I agree that Lawrence had a really bad game. You know, even before when they think he got the concussion, he was having a bad game. You can't let that first fumble happen, obviously. He had missed some throws throughout the game. Just overall, he wasn't as good as he had been, you know, in previous weeks. I don't even think he was as good as he was against Cleveland, honestly.
I thought it was like maybe his worst game this season. Yeah. Like I was like kind of struggling to think of a game that was worse going back to last year, like the Denver game in London. Especially that game was kind of marked by like poor decisions in the red zone. And that's just the same thing that happened last night.
And this was just like him spraying the ball, you know, like just pure inaccuracy. Right. Maybe it obviously isn't, you know, the most accurate quarterback in the league. He's no Brock Purdy, obviously, but he's never been like the Mitch Trubisky, Blake Bortles-esque quarterback who just, you know, is spraying the ball all over the field. And that's what it felt like yesterday. Even with that said, like, I feel like that's been the first game this season where he was the main culprit for the offense's issues. And the idea of him now not potentially not being available in the lineup moving forward, I mean, I don't even know what game plan he really come up with in that scenario.
Yeah, it's like, because like that was probably the worst game of his season. Like, he was like the main culprit of kind of like bringing the offense down. But at the same time, like, he was the main thing that was bringing the offense up. Like, he was still like putting together nice drives, and then Jacksonville just like wasn't really able to finish. But like I think the fumbles problem is that like it won't completely go around because he does have kind of like a gangly frame, and like he does need to just do better of like holding the ball. Like, I think on the first fumble, he was just trying to like switch it to his outside hand. But it's like, sure, you're a football, or sure, you're a quarterback, but like, you're also a football player. Like, I'm sure he would agree that like you got to hold on to the ball there. But I think like the main thing, or like the underlying issue, is that he's just forcing plays. And like, as you kind of recounted with those three plays before the fumble happened, with like, there was a blown block that led to the ETN, negative rush, a false start, and then a drop. So it's like, can you really like blame the guy for like kind of tucking and running and like try to make something out of it? And then like on the fourth quarter drive, when they were down by 10 in the red zone, and Ridley had that one that was like a near touchdown, but it kind of got bobbled. That was one of like three drops in a row. There was an Elijah Cooks drop that happened where it just bounced off his hands. There was the Ridley drop in the red zone, and then Ridley dropped one on the sideline to play after that. And then there was like multiple false starts at your home field. Evan Engram, the one that where like Trevor was kind of like fading away and missed Engram on a third down in the fourth quarter. I think that was Engram's fault because he didn't like sit down on the route. Obviously, it didn't really look like a clean or nice throw from Lawrence, but I would pin that more on like the route running. So like, there's just so many issues that keep popping up in every different place. And so it's like, yeah, Lawrence objectively had a pretty terrible game, but I think it was terrible because of all the things that are happening around him. It's not like we'd be having a totally different conversation, I think, if like Jacksonville played a clean game offensively, except for number 16. But like, pretty much the entire offense had like a pretty inconsistent and bad day. So I definitely think it's like atrocious to like call out Lawrence for not being a good quarterback and like starting trade rumors and all of this like atrocity on the internet.
Yeah, like you could acknowledge, I think, when he has a bad game. And, you know, like we both said, I think it was his worst game of the season. But
right.
I think you put it best. Like, he is the reason the offense goes most of the time, which it's just, yeah, it's really an indisputable fact. Like, we could talk for hours, and we won't do it in this avenue about, you know, the whole, you know, what is Trevor Lawrence, how good is Trevor Lawrence topic, et cetera. Like I've said before a million times, I think the generational tag being thrown out there by big draft media really, you know, kind of skewed and broke people's brains about him, you know, forever and ever. And nobody was saying any of these things 3 weeks ago, like 4 weeks ago. It just, the NFL and, you know, the first take brain of most, you know, modern day sports fans, it's, you know, what did you do in your last game? And his last game was probably one of his worst. But I agree with you. When it really feels like the way the offense plays, it needs Lawrence in the passing game to be perfect to have a chance. And when he's not perfect, I mean, last night is what you get, you know, 7 points. They don't have the ability to prop him up, if that makes sense. You know, like, he has to prop the rest of the offense up. And
yeah,
if anything, when he struggles, maybe this sounds like a cop-out, I just think it shows the, you know, the warts on the actual roster and the other problems with the team, as opposed to showing that he is, you know, the problem, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's really frustrating too, because it's like, not only is the supporting cast and the environment around him like make mistakes, but they're also like not really making highlight plays either. Like, it's not like Lawrence is like really the only playmaker on the team. I feel like ETN was a playmaker in the first half of the season, but he's just like, he was like, hasn't really done much since the bye week. I feel like he probably has like two carries of over 15 yards since then. And like, Engram is objectively a good tight end, but he makes like one or two splash plays a game. Obviously Zay and Ridley have been pretty disappointing in these three consecutive losses. And so like, again, it's like it's one thing for like to get like no hope and no help in like the facts that your receivers are dropping passes, but he's also getting no help in the facts that like his receivers aren't like catching a pass and then like breaking a tackle and going upfield. Like Lawrence just kind of has to do everything, and so when like things are falling apart around him, I'm not surprised that he kind of falls apart himself.
Yeah, Jags, they have him with four drops yesterday. Two PFF, they. that is how we refer to, you know, that now. They. Now PFF had him with four drops, two from ETN, one from Elijah Cooks, and one from Parker Washington, of course, yeah.
I thought there was, like, really had two other ones that were, like, yeah, they would have been tough catches, but I would have considered them drops.
It was – like, again, I agree with you that it was the offense as a whole. I still think Lawrence was probably – I don't know. It's, he had the biggest highs of the offense, but he also had, you know, some of the worst lows. So I struggle to say who played worse, him or the cast. But, like I thought Ridley had some impressive plays, like, specifically in the first half. It felt like in the second half they couldn't really get it to him. I didn't think – you know, from our vantage point that we get, I didn't think, other than a play here or there, that they were really winning outside. Like, it didn't seem like there was, you know, much separation in general. I really thought it'd be a week that they would, you know, try to pepper Ingram, but it makes sense in a way, you know, Roquan Smith, Kyle Hamilton, etc. And the usage of the running game, I go so back and forth. Like, yeah, some of it is probably some Monday morning, you know, quarterback, which, you know, I'm definitely a victim and a darn proud one.
Sure.
Exactly. But after the first half, they had seven designed runs. I mean, after the first quarter, they had seven designed runs, you know. So only three in the second half in general. I get that they're not good at running the ball, but against a specific Ravens defense – you know, we talked about it before. You know, they go all out to stop the pass. It's the opposite of the Jaguars' defense. How you beat them is running the ball and setting up shot plays, which is what led to, you know, Jamal Agnew's touchdown to begin with. And we saw their offensive success. You just saw the offense flowed easier when they did run the ball. And it felt like once they ran into a couple tackle for losses, they just, you know, abandoned it. Like, the score was 10-7 on the first play of the fourth quarter. Like, I know the Ravens scored a touchdown on the first play of the fourth quarter, but it was still a one-score game or a 10-point game the whole time. It didn't feel like they had to get away from the run as much as they did.
No, I'm totally with you. I think, I mean, Doug did say today that, like, sometimes the plays are dictated by the personnel. And so, like, they probably they probably called a bunch of like RPOs that turned into passes rather than runs, which like didn't really help kind of like the box score watching that we're doing. But like, at the same time, like, you can like do a little more under center stuff, set up like some under center play action. And like, more than anything, like, the problem I have is like they were just like leaning too much into like the deep balls and like trying to like get back a lot of yards or a lot of points like all at once. Cause like, it's one thing if you're going to go away from the run, like, you can kind of like talk an argument out of that, I think, but like, you still have to like be able to like drive down the field consistently and like just kind of go one play at a time. And so I think it's just press kind of stops going one play at a time, and you can definitely chalk a lot of that up to going away from the run, but they were just like pressing, no pun intended, and like just trying to force stuff a little bit too much too early.
Do you consider the screen game a part of the running game?
No, like, I get like that phrase and like the phrase makes sense, but
I'm asking what it means. I didn't come up with it.
Like, are like short like screen passes like aren't happening like part of the run game?
Yeah. So even if they did, which the Jaguars have said before that they do, Lawrence especially, Lawrence yesterday per PFF were 6 of 7 on screens for 13 yards, 1.9 you know yards per attempt.
That's what I'm saying. There's no one making a play, and like it's not completely on Jags receivers, because like I feel like the RPOs are fairly predictable at this point. And part of that is also, I think, because like after Doug was like so good with RPOs with the Eagles, like the league like kind of harpened down or like hardened up on calling ineligible offensive linemen downfield a lot more, and so like now they're like just doing the bubble screen RPO every time, it feels like. So the play call is like getting a little bit predictable, in my opinion, but at the same time, like, be nice to see more than like 1.0 yards of rack per reception.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I get why, you know, you don't spam the running game, especially when it's not working. It just, and I completely get, you know, like you said, maybe adjusting to the personnel that the Ravens throw at you. It feels like, you know, when this team's under center and play action, like I don't want to say Jared Goff it with, you know, the quarterback position, but obviously even if the running game production isn't the same, I think that's been one of the big things out the year. Like I don't think Lawrence would be dropping back 40 plus times in a game like Sunday was, especially like I said, when it was 10-7 most of the game. And I agree with you. Like there was a noticeable, I thought, you know, lack of plays made other than, you know, a handful of Ridley catches, ETN early on, Zay's catch, obviously, you know, at the end of the first half, even if he didn't get out of bounds, it was a really impressive catch. Probably his best play of the season, you know, I'd venture to say, other than maybe his touchdown against Buffalo.
Yeah, it was a ridiculously good throw, too. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Like, it would be pretty easy to overthrow him considering, like, his top speed right now. And then, obviously, like, the defender was right behind him, so.
That's another thing to factor in. Like, much like nobody talked about losing Christian Kirk when they did because Trevor got hurt, because Trevor has a concussion, nobody's really, you know, looking at the fact that it looked like Jones had a pretty significant hamstring injury. You know, not to speculate on it, but like he could, like, you know, basically crumble to the ground after, you know,
Lawrence
was passing to the fifth row late in the game. You know, it definitely. You know, you can tell even before then, like he just hasn't been, you know, it seems like last year, and you can probably chalk that up largely to the knee injury he's battled throughout the season. So then you look at the offense, and like you said, it's Ingram, it's ETN, who you kind of saw last night, maybe why, like he's still been used in the passing game this year. I feel like as a check down option, obviously his touchdown against the Steelers, but you kind of saw, I think, last night why he's not like, his utilization isn't more varied, if that makes sense. You know, like, he's just not always a natural guy catching the football. So, and then Ridley, who is, you know, depending on the game, on or off, like, yeah, it just feels like an offense right now. Not a lot of weapons. It didn't feel like a good game for Washington. Like, Agnew made the biggest play of the game on the offense, and he was still, like, mostly schemed open. Like, credit to him for the turning it into a touchdown, the yards after a catch, obviously, but it was more or less a wide-open throw because of the route combination and the play action.
Yeah, and then, like, I'm pretty sure he was getting covered by a linebacker, so he really just had to outrun him. But, yeah.
That was the most –
but it was, like, the only one that was, like, remotely close to working. It's weird seeing, like, that much separation for a Jags receiver downfield.
I was going to say, that was the most 49ers play they've had all year, right?
Yeah, for sure. That's a good way to put it.
100%. And I think, you know, Daniel Griffiths, you know, who does a great job with us, tweeted out, you know, the NGS, like, average yard of separation. And I think almost everybody was, like, obviously not, you know, below the league average by a significant amount. I believe NGS, you know, had the same stuff last night. Like, the Ravens are just separating at a much higher level. So, I don't know. A lot of questions, obviously, with the offense. I thought the line played okay. Like, it felt like as the game went on, they played worse because the Jaguars were obviously – like, they were just teeing off against the pass.
The Jags were just chucking it.
Yeah, so I thought they started off okay. PFF, you know, had Walker with 8 pressures. Luke Fortner with 4 pressures, which for a center is, like, a pretty astronomical number. Anton with 3 pressures, and then Sheriff and Ezra Cleveland with 1 pressure each. You know, it didn't seem like Cleveland was really being a people mover, and – I want to see which pressure PFF had him for, because on the play Lawrence potentially got injured on, the one with Roquan, like, got him with the forearm, and then he was basically, like, German suplex after. It looked like – I don't know if it was Matabuke or who, but Cleveland got, like, thrown basically off his feet. So it'll be interesting to go back and with my own eyes and, you know, really watch that one, you know, more closely. Because we watching the offense today, though, it felt like the offensive line did – better than I thought they would. Not to say good, but better than I thought they would.
Yeah. No, I think it's a fair point that they were, like, pretty solid in the first half. I think, like, the pockets for Lawrence, like, looked a lot better and they were a lot less muddled in the first half. And then obviously, like, they were able to get the run game going a little bit, and that's some credit to the offensive line. But I think it's, like, kind of a yikes scenario for the run game, the fact that, like, they're missing their top receiver and their quarterback has, like, three different injuries. Zay Jones is injured. Like, you're on your 12th different starting offensive line combination, and, like, you're still dropping it back to pass as much as you are. It's, like, does not inspire a lot of confidence about the run game. Not that anyone really had any before, but.
That's fair. That's fair. Well, Gus, you got anything else on this ode to the 7 points that was? I just want to say before we go. Kansas City, San Francisco, and Baltimore, three home games against, like, elite opponents, one touchdown scored. I generally think the offense, like, has been better season long than most people think, but against the best defenses and teams that they have played, they hadn't showed up. And I think that's what they seriously need to reexamine, you know, moving into the offseason is why that was the case. Because if you can't score against those defenses, there's really no point in even having a season, you know, if you're not scoring against, you know, the top defenses. And who to blame for that goes on can probably be spread in like a million different ways. Probably a little too many screens and not enough with the run. I wasn't like offended by the game Press Taylor called last night, if that makes sense. It felt like a lot more of it was like execution than anything. Is that unfair?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, I thought they like were a little bit too aggressive too soon in the fourth quarter when they were down by like two scores. And like, I don't know, maybe it's just like recency bias after seeing the Titans like come back by 14 so late in the fourth quarter a couple weeks ago. Like, I don't like, I think like both the play caller and the quarterback, just like as they're like young and kind of figuring stuff out in the NFL in the first couple of years of having big boy jobs, like they just kind of learn how, like how to be patient. And it's like, I feel like that's like how Tom Brady won 7 Super Bowls, is he just like was the master of taking what defenses gave him. And it's like, you got to kind of play the game that way and like play the game the way that unfolds, not play the game the way that you'd like designed it in the office on Friday. Or then like trying to force it when everything is falling apart. They just got to just kind of calm down and relax.
It's exactly the advice I give to myself and Madden. That's exactly what I do. All right, that's a fair point. All right, you got anything else for us on the offense, my friend?
No, but I like that. It was Madden, like, because like you could be like putting together such an awesome drive in Madden, like running the ball like 7 times in a row, but then as soon as you have like one play that's like goes wrong, then like the whole plan goes out the hook. You're doing like 4 verts every other play. Yeah, it can get ugly quick. So
that's right. All right. We'll be back right after this break. I guess. I didn't get the sense in the locker room that the defense felt like it had played like good enough to their standard, but I'm sorry. I thought the defense played fine. I thought it played good enough to win. Yeah, I thought they played good enough to win a ball game. You know, I thought ultimately I think you can put 20 points, you know, at their feet. Not the last field goal that Justin Tucker made, because that was, you know, obviously Lawrence fumbling like at their own 18. But otherwise, Isaiah Likely makes a play that he makes what, like once every like 60 times maybe? Like just what are the odds of that ball being completed? Yeah, like to me, Lamar had 2 bad throws all night and otherwise was like MVP caliber. Like I feel like he's been every time like I watch him like play versus, you know, the Jaguars. He's a magician in the pocket. He's fantastic at extending plays but keeping his eyes downfield. Like when he gets pressured, it doesn't even look like he's looking to run. You know, he's keeping his eyes downfield, you know, trying to find throwing windows. It seemed like the Jaguars pass rush, just in terms of like beating blocks, I'd argue is maybe like the best it's been all season. Like they pressured him on like north of like 45% of like his dropbacks. Josh Allen had 8 pressures. Trayvon Walker per PFF had 6. It was, you know, probably one of his stronger games of the season. He obviously recorded a sack. He just made some Lamar plays, you know, and some of his guys, you know, like you said, the Jaguars weren't really making plays. Some of his guys made plays. Isaiah Likely, that's not a play we've really seen, you know, from a Jaguars receiver this year. Just absolutely winning at the catch point. Well, like when that ball was in the air, I think Darius Williams thought he was going to pick that ball off. It looked like he had like the perfect path to it, but Isaiah Likely's height and vertical over Darius Williams kind of made a difference there.
Well, yeah, just a little bit. It was just an MVP caliber performance from Lamar. I thought that was like the best performance by an opponent of the Jaguars that I've ever seen in person. He was just outrageously good. The Jags did a really good job on like both ends, playing a lot of zone defense in the back end with Tyson Campbell not starting. And then the pass rush did a good job of doing the so-called slow rush that I talked about at the beginning of the year, where they like are just like trying to like
kind
of, yeah, like just like maintain rush and lane integrity and like not allow Jackson to break contain. And so like, again, like both the pass rush and the coverage were awesome, but then Lamar was just kind of being Lamar. And like, I feel like there was like Rashad Bateman had a really big catch in the first quarter. And like, that was like the only like, just like bad play by the Jaguars defense, I felt like, but like just playing Lamar Jackson is pretty tough, especially when you don't have Andre Sisco, though, I think, because Andrew Wingard was like right there with Darius Williams for that big Isaiah Likely catch. And then Isaiah Likely scored earlier in the game, and Dewey was like a little bit late to get over to that side. So like there's two big Likely plays where I was kind of thinking like, if a healthy Andre Sisco is in the game, I wonder if either of those passes are completed, let alone turn into like big plays for the Ravens. And then like, the only other like issue I thought the Jags defense had was like the run defense late in the game, because obviously Baltimore was able to kind of like chew the game away a little bit. But at the same time, like Jacksonville's offense didn't do their defense a lot of favors, and the Jags defense was on the field for a long time. And like, I'm not like really blaming them too much for not having a great run defense in the fourth.
That's what it felt like live. It definitely felt like they were just like exhausted and, yeah, right, literally chasing Lamar around all night and doing it. You know, the Jags, I think, had back-to-back three and outs, you know, I want to say right after the Agnew touchdown. So, you know, they didn't really seem to build any momentum at all. I know most people put like the week before, I disagreed that the offense was the only thing that lost them the game. Like, I thought the defense had, you know, while keeping them in the game with turnovers, you know, obviously the wide open plays that Njoku and David Bell were inexcusable. I thought the defense was much better from that sense this week. You know, like you didn't get those guys running, you know, wide open. Like maybe the closest one was like on Lamar's first pass of the game to Isaiah Likely, where it was a broken play and Antonio Johnson came up to tackle him and Likely, you know, got open for, I think it was like a 15-yard catch or something like that. Otherwise, it seemed like guys were really disciplined. I thought it was one of the defensive line's best performances, you know, this season. Josh Allen, I thought, you know, yeah, he didn't get the sack record, whatever, but I thought he had a great game. Eight pressures per PFF, a 40.9% win rate, a 66.7% win rate on true pass sets. Like he was just, and I think you count in his run defense, I thought he was just dominant. You know, intentional grounding he forced in the first half on the third down, more or less, you know, could have counted as a sack just in terms of the general impact that it had. So I thought overall the defense played better than it has in the last couple of weeks. And it's like a good example of the NFL. They played the best game in weeks, and it was against probably the best player individually they've played this year. I know they played Mahomes, but I'd argue Lamar is playing a little bit better than Mahomes at this current, you know, state of time, even if Mahomes is obviously the better player. But they played Lamar better than they played Jake Browning and Joe Flacco, which will never make any sense, you know, to me at all.
Yeah. I wonder if it's like, I almost feel like it's a respect thing where like they just like didn't respect Jake Browning or Joe Flacco enough, or like, and then like their respective coaching staffs ended up kind of burning the Jags defense. Like we talked a lot about how gash they got off of play action, and then like this week and then their like most recent win against the Texans against CJ Stroud, like they actually kind of like paid a lot of respect to the opposing quarterback, and the opposing quarterback like still got his, because Stroud and Jackson are both great passers. But I mean, once they kind of knew like what the job they needed to get done, I guess, with a little bit more respect to the passers. I think they just played a better game.
Yeah, no, I would probably 100% agree with that. Maybe it's human nature, dude. It's get up for games like that, and then they don't get up for a game against Joe Flacco, and then next thing you know, he has 200 passing yards against you. But, you know, it to me was encouraging, I think, for the next – like, at least going into next week, I think, encouraging how they played. I thought also, you know, Rayshon Jenkins on the likely touchdown, I'm not sure who was at fault. You know, I know you mentioned Wingard. Throw that play out, you know, Rayshon's sack. It was a third down sack of Lamar and his interception. I thought it was his best game, you know, really of the season. And it was a standout performance. I thought Devon Hamilton had his best game of the year, honestly. Yeah. Like, he looks more like the Devon, you know.
Right. You know, he was, like, literally seemed like a shell of his former self in every previous game. And then this week it was like, oh, wow, he was actually, like, really popping like he did last year. And then same with Rayshon. It was like a vintage Rayshon game, as in like the type of good game that he had last year, where he's just like kind of making plays all over the place. So, yeah, the defense was pretty incredible, I thought. Like, just allowing two touchdowns to an offense led by an MVP, like, caliber player. And when you're like the offense also gives up two turnovers, and like you miss two field goals to give the Ravens like good field goal position, I thought it was like their best defensive performance probably since before the bye week, maybe since
For sure. And you know, just for context, the Ravens point scored in the previous games 37 20 in a weird game against the Chargers, but then 34 31 37 31 38. Like, this is an offense that, like, for like a month plus, I've just been absolutely, you know, cooking. And yeah, I thought they hung tough. So, like, moving forward, we'll obviously talk about Tampa more on Friday, but just how much does a performance like that, you know, encourage you for, you know, the next few weeks, especially considering the defense, you know, might have to carry them. Also factoring in, you know, potentially getting guys like Andre Sisco and Tyson Campbell back.
Yeah, this gives me, like, full confidence in Mike Caldwell again, that, like, this defense at least has, like, the bones to be good. And, like, sometimes –
he's back.
Especially in the past, like, month or two, when there's been a good amount of, like, key injuries to both the front and the back end, you can kind of see, like, I don't know, the skin shriveling a little bit and, like, things fall apart. But, like they've got a good system in place. They've got a good core in place. And so, like, as long as kind of, like, the edges, like, hold up on their own, I don't know. Like, I think there's a pretty solid unit that's, like, capable of kind of replicating their run in the first half of the season when they were like performing like a top five unit. And so I think that's like a reasonable peak that they can get back to, but then like I think they're good enough to mostly avoid getting like into below average defense territory. So it definitely, the performance gave me a lot of confidence. I think it's like you still have the same like zoomed out worries about like what's going to happen in the playoffs once they run into really good offenses and really good quarterbacks every single week, but just at least for the next three games to close the regular season, I'm feeling good about the defense.
I'll say it. Caleb on Chase on had a good game.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah. He flashed like three times instead of his usual one time or half zero times.
Half a time.
His usual half a flash per game.
Yeah.
Probably like 4.5 flashes over expectation Sunday night, you think?
I hate that. I absolutely hate that. I thought, honestly, a bounce back game for Devin Lloyd for the most part, too. Like, yeah, there was there's maybe some plays he'd like to have back, but it was much better in like the previous two games. I thought he was really physical, too, which I think has shown up more this season than last season. Like, he has some hits that he brings it.
Right. Yeah. There was times last year where it was like, it almost seemed like he was like afraid to hit or afraid of contact. But in this Ravens game, he definitely did a good job of like attacking holes and playing really physical, did a good job in the run game for the most part. And so I thought like, especially with like the play action being kind of like the detriment to the defense in recent weeks, the linebackers needed to bounce back. So I thought, I mean, not that Foye has been like really bad in recent weeks, but I thought like both linebackers had a good needed performance.
Yeah, 100%. So, like you said, I think it can give you optimism, you know, in the defense moving forward, especially after the last couple like weeks. Like, it just felt like they had really like lost their way, you know, on defense. And I don't know, maybe you're right. Maybe it is so galaxy brain that it was simply because they were playing Jake Browning and Joe Flacco that, you know, they don't play. That seems like that's the case for like every time the Jaguars play a backup quarterback. I am not convinced at all that the Jaguars would get like that kind of backup performance. I think they'd get like Tommy DeVito against the Cowboys earlier. Mm-hmm. This year is the most likely outcome for a Jaguars backup quarterback.
Totally agree.
Yeah, so
game balls.
We're on the same page there. Game balls, but right after this break.
First.
All right, guys. I want to start with a special teams game ball because I want you to prove to me that you're doing the work as a takesman and you're breaking down. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The third facet of football, the third unit. Come on. Let's hear it.
Yep. Yep. I got Logan Cook written down because even though he did not do two punts inside the 20-yard line. I don't know. What.
How do you make me irate over a special teams game ball?
So he didn't have – you said he was going to have two punts down inside the 20-yard line. He ended up having one pinned at the 11 and then another pinned at the 24. And then his third punt of the evening was like a 60-yard bomb from like Jacksonville's own 3-yard line. And then that was the play where Daniel Thomas made a really good play as a gunner on the sideline. And that was like – I thought that was like the play of the game by the Jaguar. Like that was like the only play that really made me go like, wow, that was cool. That was a pretty nice punt. So I'm giving it to Logan Cook.
I hate you. I hate you for that. Was that just to bring up the fact that I said he would get two within 20? Because I...
that was part of it. But the other part of
it... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the other part of it is that I gave the returner the offensive game ball.
Okay, that makes more sense. I was going to go Agnew or Daniel. My plan was Agnew or Daniel Thomas, whichever one Gus doesn't say. He didn't say, let me cook, and I have to actually make a stance. I'm like, bro, what the hell are you doing? I ran 100 scenarios in my mind, and I didn't have Logan Cook as any of them. When you first said Logan Cook, I thought you were going to say because he yelled at the refs.
I missed that, honestly. No, he just had, just an awesome 60-yarder, and then he had two other, like, solid punts.
On McManus's first missed field goal, I'll never be the refs decided again guy because they didn't. The Jaguars beat themselves. Like they have in almost every other loss this year, but it did seem like the refs missed roughing the kicker, running into the kicker, like yeah, whatever it is. It seemed like a pretty clear miss on McManus's first field goal, and you could see like as the Ravens offense is coming onto the field, Logan Cook ripping into a referee. And then they show the replay on the big screen, and he's like pointing at it with the ref. He's like, "Look, dude, look." And then the head official comes down to the sidelines to talk to a still irate Cook, and then Cook. Heath Farwell and Luke Thompson, the assistant special teams coordinator, were all three still talking to a ref as like the Ravens offense and Jaguars defense were playing. It was a good scene. You missed it?
Yeah, I missed it, but yeah. I mean, that's what you tune into the Jaguar Report podcast for. Exactly.
He was pissed. I genuinely thought that's who you were going to. So I'll give half the game ball.
I have no idea, but that just like heightens my case. There you go.
Okay, I'll give half a game ball to Daniel Thomas and half a game ball to Jermaine. You're making me split it. Daniel Thomas, obviously, an amazing hustle play. Like I've got a really newfound respect for punt gunners and special teams since I've started covering, you know, the NFL. Just like, you know, what they do, how important they are to the overall roster and special teams. Daniel Thomas, it feels like we've been saying for his entire career now, is a really underrated and good special teamer, gunner specifically. And that was just an awesome play that he made. Jamal Agnew had some really big returns. I think he had a 28-yard return, like a 39-yard return. He was incredibly explosive. But let's go ahead and get to the offense since, you know, I guess you wanted to shake things up.
Yeah, well, so I was thinking about Daniel Thomas, but then he just made one great play. It was a great play, but I feel like you've gotten on my case before about giving out a game ball for someone who made, like, one good play.
It's so a special like, game right. ball.
Yeah.
You're giving it to Logan Cook for kicking the ball three times. One time within the 20.
You got to make your kicks. Logan Cook made his kick.
If Daniel Thomas doesn't make that tackle,
that punt I promise you, I still give it to Logan Cook. Because I thought as it was in the air, I was like, wow, that was impressive. I'm sticking with Logan Cook. He gets my game ball. I thought about giving a half a game ball to Travis Etienne for his first half performance, since he then kind of disappeared in the second half. But instead, I'm just going with Jamal Agnew for the offensive game ball because he had the 65-yard touchdown. And, I mean, you did bring it up earlier. Like, it was a good job to actually score the touchdown and kind of, like, break the last guy. But really, he just, like, outran a linebacker. But it was the longest touchdown offensively of his career. So, game ball for Jamal.
Mm-mm.
What?
66-yard touchdown run against the Colts.
2021. Really?
Yeah. You just got bulky ball, buddy.
Well, I don't even know which Twitter account to blame for my mistake. So.
Longest touchdown catch of his. Last thing that I won't talk about Daniel Thomas again until his next special teams tackle. I can't figure out a way to upload a photo for you guys to see here, but you know you could see on the broadcast before the game him entering the game for whatever reason with like the Mario costume.
Oh yeah, and you had like. Too
in the locker room after the game, super somber locker room, everybody just walking around, you know, pretty upset. Just a pair of Mario boots and a son Mario just sitting there.
He didn't wear it out of the game, did he? He had a different change of clothes.
I couldn't tell you.
Oh man, imagine if you wore that out of the stadium.
It struck me when I was leaving. I looked up and saw it. I died. good bit. Okay. Yeah, offense game ball, Agnew. I'll go. I don't know, dude.
I said Rayshon Jenkins. I feel like Josh Allen was pretty clearly like the best player on the field when the Jags defense was playing, but Rayshon had two like huge plays between the sack that he had on a third down and then the interception, making just easily the best play in coverage he's made all season. So Rayshon for me.
I didn't give a offensive game ball, but
I'm mind must have blanked and I thought you were just we were already on to the next. Everything got blurry.
I thought Calvin Ridley flashed the most. I don't care. I know, five catches for like 38 yards.
I thought some impressive catches. I thought about giving the game ball to both like him and Trevor because like they both like made mistakes, but like at the same time, like they're kind of like both like the best players.
That's how we win people over. That's how we read the room. We take the people they're most mad at right now and give them the game ball. That's how we get it going. But
that's good. I might have to whip up a graphic.
You're not wrong because I don't know who else you pick. I don't think it's Zay. I don't think Ingram had enough highs.
No.
ETN didn't have the usage, I think. Obviously not Perker Washington. You picked Agnew, and even he literally made the one play. I think the touchdown he caught was his third route of the game, and it was in the third quarter. So, like, and his other route was a screen that he, to be frank, you know, tackled himself on.
I forgot to list that one earlier when I was going over like all of just like the shoot yourself in the foot type errors that the Jags made. It was like someone laid a tripwire on the field and he just caught himself. But
yeah, I'm with you. And you know, Luke Farrell
has like a similar case to Jamal where he had one really nice play. It was like the only seam catch by a tight end like in Trevor Lawrence's Jags career. It feels like
now this year at least. Like it felt like last year, Ingram had a couple. And
yeah,
it feels like this year. So Did I say on the podcast, or is this like a bit I would have with you in person at training camp, that Farrell would be their second most productive tight end? I've definitely said it to you before, right?
Let me try to do some research and see if I can pull up anything. Let's see. Podcast okay. from May 31st. Luke Farrell will have the second most catches and snaps among tight ends in May.
There we go. Yeah. We're cooking. We're cooking. 12 catches for 148 yards, no touchdowns, compared to 4 catches for 34 yards and 1 touchdown, most of which came in one game. I'm taking the W on that one. He's the weapon, man. You can't stop him. You can only hope to contain him.
I think you had a pretty similar one. I don't feel like looking it up, but I think you had something pretty similar about like D'Ernest Johnson getting like more touches look or snaps.
Look it up. Come on. All right. Come on. Tank, I believe, had one snap. Which, again, kind of shows you like their lack of willingness to run it. Like, it seems like they only really trust him to be on the field for running plays, and then they ran like 12 of those all game. Yeah, Tank Bigsby, one snap. That's crazy, man. He played the same amount of snaps as Josh Peterson.
Holy man. That's not good.
Who, by the way, got destroyed on that ETN run that preceded Ingram's false start, that preceded Washington's horrible drop, that preceded Lawrence's fumble. So you tell me what the root cause is. You can stop looking for it now. You can stop.
Yeah, no, I can't. I give up. I tried at least. But I think you did say it. Like, so credit to you for correctly guessing the second string running back and tight end.
Thanks. Now let's not talk about any of the ones I got wrong. All right. You got any takes to send us out of here, my friend?
I think a take that we're gonna see on Monday is that like a similar one to Jake Browning, like what does Joe Burrow do that Jake Browning can't do? Like that ridiculousness. I think we'll see something similar with CJ Beathard, because I'm expecting at this point CJ to start, and like the Bucks since Todd Bowles got to Tampa Bay, they've been a pass funnel defense, meaning that their run defense has always been really good. So it like encourages opposing teams to pass more. So I think like Jacksonville's passing offense is hypothetically on paper set up to succeed. And so I think the Jags are going to be able to like scratch their way to a like ugly win with CJ. And then people are going to be like, I don't know. They're look a little better with CJ than they do with Trevor. And we're just going to have to deal with that next week. That's
300.
My
300 yard, 3 touchdown, CJ Beathard.
I'll say 300 yards is a lot. I'll say,
is it in the NFL anymore? Like, maybe in 2023 it is. For this team, it is.
I'd like to say it is for a backup quarterback, but then obviously we just saw two backup quarterbacks go forever 300 against the Jags. So sure, hot take, CJ Beathard's going for over 300 passing yards next week.
Why'd you let me bully you into that?
That's the whole thing of the show. That's what the show is at this point.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
I guess, still might land on Logan Cook, though. He gets my game ball, but I'm letting you talk me into CJ Beathard props now.
Yeah. I think I would genuinely agree with you in terms of, you know, this is a game where they should be set up to succeed, but we'll see. But we'll talk about that.
After Tim Jones' 50-yard bomb next week, that's
the catnip that we give people for Friday. So tune in Friday. You want to hear about that. Thank you guys for listening to the 79th episode of the Jaguar Report. John Shipley, my co-host, friend, Gus Logue. We'll be back with you guys on Friday.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hessilo V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Moreno is a MAGA mistake for black families. If Moreno is elected senator, he'll push to eliminate diversity, equality, and inclusion programs as part of the racist MAGA Republican Project 2025. We've come too far to let extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. MAGA Moreno is a mega mistake for Ohio. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.